When you act as an example for who you want to be, your kids will take that on. And it also impacts how you talk to them, how you act around them. You're happier if you are in control of your emotions and can remain calm in yourself. And I don't mean you control yourself. I mean, when you truly feel, yeah, I've got this, your kids will pick that up.
Hello, everybody. I'd like to welcome you to my podcast, Renew Motherhood. And this episode is Moms Turn Chaos into Creative Gold. For this topic, I have got a great guest here, Lee Schulman. And I'd like to hand it over to you, Lee. Please briefly introduce yourself. Who are you? Where are you from? And yes, what does this topic mean to you?
Thank you for having me here today. This is a topic that's really close to my heart. So my name is Lee Schulman, and I've moved around a lot in my life. I was born in South Africa. I grew up in the United States, lived in a bunch of other places, and now I'm in Argentina. And what this topic means to me, basically, I mean, I'm a writer, I'm a creative, and I work with other women and creatives. A lot of them are mothers also. And, you know, we tend to have this idea that things need to be in order. But the way I see it, chaos is actually what we need to be creative. And I think it's really important to become creative and become comfortable with chaos. And because that discomfort is what pushes us past our boundaries and allows us to create things that we can't create when we're following the rules and coloring between the lines.
That's great. And you know what? I think it's also important to be creative. So it's because this is a special moment or a special place to be when you really, can make something happen, right? So, and let's just jump into it. When life gets chaotic, what's the one thing you do to turn that stress into creative fuel?
Well, the one thing I do when things are, there's different kinds of chaos. So there's life chaos. You know, what was it the other day? It's summertime in Argentina right now. So I was on the way to take my son to camp, and I was supposed to meet up with somebody when I got there. And as I was driving out of the house or out of our yard, my tire popped. And, and then at the same time, something else happened in the house, and we had all this stuff going on, and there was no way to actually address it all and get where I was going on time. So basically, I think you just have to surrender to it, because for me, and I think for a lot of people, it's the pushing back and like wanting things to not be chaotic when they are chaotic that makes it worse. So often for me, the big thing to do is just stop. And take a breath. Just take a deep breath. And I think also living in Argentina, because depending on where, like, people in the United States, I've lived in the United States, I haven't spent any time in Germany, but Germans definitely have a reputation that things need to happen on time.
Oh, yes.
Where, I mean, and I don't even know if that's true, but Argentina, this is true. Showing up on time has a very different meaning. Mm-hmm. And I think it's taught me how to just sort of relax. I was actually on my way to go to a doctor's visit with a friend because she had a lump in her breast and she was going to get an MRI. So obviously I really did need to be there on time for her. And what I did was I took a deep breath and I said, all right, I left her a message. I explained what was going on. And then I just told myself, it's going to be fine. It's going to be fine. I'll get there on time. I don't have to stress. Keeping in mind that I do stress about those things, and I do like to be on time, even though I've lived here a long time. But telling myself that helped put me back in a space where I could work from a place of calmness, because whether I'm freaking out or calm, I'm not getting there any faster. So I just kind of put myself in that space, and I ended up getting there on time. Everything was fine. She got to her appointment on time. And I think it's that space of calmness, when I was saying before, just becoming comfortable with the discomfort of chaos. Just saying, deep breath, all right, I'm going to be able to do this. I'm just going to do this and see how it works out. is an amazing place to allow creativity to come up. Because when you're trying to control things, you can't tap into the creative energy, the chaotic energy that creativity has. So, I mean, it sounds really simple. Just take a deep breath, tell yourself everything's going to be fine, and then act as if. And that is really my best advice in so many situations.
That's so great. And I think, well, I can relate to this, because if you are in a stress mode, you can't get those things done, and it's not getting faster. So right. You have to step back and to say to yourself, okay, if I want to accomplish something, I have to get calm again. So if you use creative energy, or if you just want to accomplish something, it's not the space to say, okay, hurry, hurry, hurry. Sometimes I'm in this mode and I want to.
Right.
That's right. When I really have to catch myself and to say, no, that's not the way that it works. So what's one messy man moment that sparked an unexpected creative breakthrough for you? Can you imagine one?
You know, we have a lot of chaos in our house. I have a 10-year-old boy, and when his friends are over, chaos is everywhere. And I have gotten used to it, and I do enjoy it. I enjoy it. I mean, the screaming can be a little much sometimes, but when they're all running around, or if they're fighting, or they're trying to do things that maybe they're not supposed to do. And it does go back to that, just like not allowing my reaction. And Seth Godin actually says that. I think a lot of people say it. You want to respond, not react, because reaction is a stress thing. And as you were saying, when you work from a place of stress, it's not getting done any faster, and it's actually more likely to make mistakes or lose your temper or be a person you don't want to be. And, you know, I mean, this, when you're talking, usually if I'm talking about a mom moment, it usually means leading to something that we're doing with kids. Okay, so we had a bunch of kids here. I smelled burning upstairs. I was upstairs working. I went downstairs, and there were three little boys around the stove cooking, which, you know, I definitely had a freeze moment, like, oh God, this is not good. Of course, the house was a mess. The animals were everywhere. They were made forts in the living room and the couch. And, you know, my first reaction was to tell them no and shut everything down. But instead, I just sort of checked in on them and to make sure that they were actually okay, that nobody was getting burnt, nothing was on fire, nobody was hurt. And they were actually really fine. Whatever they burned was something that anybody could have burned. It wasn't dangerous. And I think, you know, over time, that was a little while ago. And now Charlie, my son, like the other day, he came to me and he's like, I want to make pancakes. I didn't really feel like making them. And he's like, can I do it myself? And he did. And the next thing you know, and I can send you the photo, he just brought this plate of pancakes to the table. And like, and that was, you know, it. And he trusted himself to do it. Mm-hmm. I don't know, you know, and he was capable of doing it. Whereas I was kind of like, oh God, children and gas stoves, I don't know. But it ended up being exactly what I would like it to be. He can cook. He feels secure in it. I feel like, hey, here's this. I love cooking. We cook together all the time. And it feels like this moment of like, well, he can cook by himself now. Not everything, but, you know, and it just felt really good. It felt really good to know that. And even having these three little boys in front of the stove, that I know I can trust them, that I can trust them to do things that they couldn't do 2 years ago. And that's a nice feeling too.
I think that's really great, because this also teaches your child to say, hey, I'm comfortable. I can do this. How much self-esteem is he building in this moment?
Absolutely.
Just to say, yes, I can.
Absolutely. And I try very hard not to have, oh, don't do that, be my first reaction to things. And I know sometimes I'm successful and sometimes I'm not. But I really do try, again, that like, take a breath, let's evaluate and react and respond instead of letting it be a reaction.
So good. So good. Thank you for sharing. This is great. And I think many mothers who are watching and listening now should consider something like that, to not always be hectic, be panic, be somewhere else just because something is not the way that they like to have it. But yes, to say, okay, what's going on here? analyze the situation first and then decide how you want to respond, right? That's not so easy to do sometimes. You have to calm your mind.
You have to practice. It's a daily practice. I mean, a lot of people talk about morning rituals or morning, what is it? Yeah, morning rituals. Like I have a morning ritual that I do every single day, and I really believe in it because I see how when I do it every day, I do my morning ritual. It's better than a day than I don't. It doesn't matter what happens in that day. So one thing I do is I wake up before everybody else. Mm-hmm. I do not look at my phone for at least an hour in the morning. Mm-hmm. And I don't look at my phone or anything online before I've done it. I meditate. Mm-hmm. I do yoga. I read. And I really center myself. And that, I don't know, there's something magical about it. There's a book called The Miracle Morning by Hal Elrod. And it really, there is something very miraculous or magical about it. I don't know why it works. Or maybe it's as simple as when you start the day focusing on yourself and not allowing yourself to be pulled in a million directions outside of yourself, which is exactly what a telephone is. It's requests from other people and their needs. When you start with yourself, you start in that mode where you're centered in yourself, and therefore it is easier to respond and take that breath and figure out what you want as opposed to constantly sort of showing up for what other people need.
Yes, I love this, having your morning ritual, your morning routine, and to go for it. I know that if you give your mind, if you give your thoughts a direction, this structures your whole day. And I also have my morning routine, so because otherwise I think I would be blown away.
Well, what's your morning routine? I love
It's very similar. I always start with the meditation. Well, actually in bed. Mm-hmm. So the first meditation is in bed. Then I sit down and write my gratitude and write my intentions for the day. Yes. And I pray. I'm a Christian, so I connect to God. Yes. After this, I usually do some sports. So my bicycle is just close to me. But we have got winter time now here in Germany. It's not the right moment to talk about this.
But I mean, I do yoga. I do yoga every morning. And I'm also, excuse me, I try to give it space also. So it's not like, okay, I must do this from this time to this time and then this from this. You know, there's some days, like last night, I got to sleep really late. So I let myself sleep a little later, and I started the meditation. I mean, when I say later, I mean 6. Like, I get up pretty early because I want to be awake for at least an hour before anyone else is awake.
Yeah.
But, you know, if I only have time for 15 minutes of yoga, that's fine. And other days, I have time for an hour. Just doing it, just taking the action is enough. And I think there's an element of sort of self-care, of giving ourselves space to not have to be perfect.
Yeah.
I really work that into my day and the way I do most things. I want to reach my goals, but you said something earlier, you know, how do you remain calm when things aren't the way you would like them to be? Mm-hmm. And the idea of having to control everything around me or around us, it's a lot of pressure. It's a lot of pressure. And, you know, I think it's really important that we give ourselves that space. And that, I call it grace and space. Give yourself grace and space. I'm sure I'm not the only one who says that. Mm-hmm. You know, just, and forgiveness. You know, if things aren't the way you would like them to be, that's okay, because that's kind of how life is. And, you know, you can't control other people. You certainly can't control your children. Well, you can try, but good luck with that.
Well, you control them by controlling yourself, right?
I think that there's truth to that. There's a lot of truth to that. When you act as an example for who you want to be, your kids will take that on. And it also impacts how you talk to them, how you act around them. You're happier if you are in control of your emotions and can remain calm in yourself. And I don't mean you control yourself. I mean, when you truly feel, I've got this, your kids will pick
that up. Connect to yourself, probably.
Exactly. And that takes a lot of pressure off of having to keep everything around you in place. Because all you really have to worry about is, am I okay? Am I doing this the way I want? What do I need to make sure that I am in the space I want to be? And then that reverberates outward.
Yeah, yeah, that's totally fine. I think this is a great way to go. And how do you find clarity to create in the middle of the daily noise and demands of motherhood?
So, okay.
So is it really starting your morning routine? Is this the clarity, or is there anything else you would like to add?
Well, the morning routine gives me all of that, the creativity, the clarity, the calm, the seas. That's so funny. I was listening to a meditation yesterday. This year, I signed up for Gabby Bernstein's manifestation. She has a 21-day manifestation course. And just last night, she was talking about, the one that I was listening to yesterday was talking about connecting to the seas. So all the things I just happened to say were directly from that. Well, my morning routine starts my day with me. But I'll also say, over time, how I connect to creativity when my day is constantly moving and there's so much that's going on and you get a call from the school. And like, this happened, we're in summer break right now, but at the end of the school year, they had the end of the year show. It was the 30th anniversary of the school. So it was a much bigger production. And I think it was a very short amount of time before, like, there were all these sort of demands on the parents, like, oh, we need a costume. But it wasn't just go out and buy a t-shirt and pants or find what you have at home. It was something very specific that we ended up as a class getting made. And so there were all these like last minute things. Meanwhile, it's the end of the year. The end of the year is always the most chaotic, even though it's supposed to be holiday celebration season. It's so chaotic. Buying the presents, making sure you have everything in place, making sure you finish everything. And, you know, so, okay, so just taking a step back, how you show up for yourself changes over time. And the chaos of everything kind of moving around that is out of your control is very different than the creative chaos that I'm talking about. That outer chaos that are the people and the places and the things that happen around you, those change over time. So, you know, when I first started writing, finding time to write was very different than it is now. Now, writing is part of my work. And that was very intentional. It wasn't like that when I first started. And artistic endeavors in general, I think are often considered frivolous. They're extra. You know, I have this conversation with different people in my writing community and with other people that I'm working with just about every week, because you don't make money from art until you do it for a while. Mm-hmm. And therefore, at the beginning, when you're so-called practicing, because you need practice with anything you do, at the beginning, there's not money coming in, and therefore art and creativity are not considered valid. I don't believe that. I think they're very important. I think our creative expression, even if it's in a journal and nobody sees it, are crucial, because that's taking what's in us and putting it out of outside of us in a form. It takes form. You know, just like this happens, you know, I talk to people about this all the time. People have ideas for a book and it'll go around their head and they think about it and they have all these ideas. But when you go to write it down, it's different and it changes. Mm-hmm. And what ends up on the paper doesn't look like what was in your head. And I think often people get very discouraged with that, but that's the nature of it, because you're taking something that's intangible and you're making it tangible. So that's...
Well, I love this, actually. This is a great example, because what pops up is my little daughter, who always likes to create something and to draw and to paint. And then she has got an image in her head and she likes to put it down. And she's always, no, it doesn't look like it should be.
Not yet. And that, like, patience and chaos go hand in hand. You know, because what's in your head, it takes a long time for the thing you see in your head to end up on the paper, whether it's a sculpture, a drawing, or a story, or whatever it is. It takes time and practice to take something from your head and put it on paper to make it tangible. I mean, I think of it like language translation. I think it's exactly like that.
What would you say is a skill that you need or that you practice if you do this? Is there any skill?
To practice which part exactly?
To say, okay, I get this image from my head down to the paper. If it's a picture, if it's writing, if it's creating sculpture, or I don't know, to get this tangible. Well, sometimes, yes, you need some skills with your hand to create something, but writing is not, well, everyone knows, or a lot of people know how to write. Mm-hmm. So it's not the skill of writing, but there is something behind, I think, that you have to practice.
Well, I think, you know, first it's patience, because when something comes out of your head and ends up on paper and it's not the way you liked it, there's, you know, and I see this with my son. I saw it with my daughter. I see it with a lot of people. There's this impetus, you know, I see it with clients all the time, to say, oh, it wasn't what I wanted, let's get rid of it. Mm-hmm. Well, no, don't get rid of it. You know, finish it. Finish it. Mm-hmm. You know, well, if it's a drawing and you start it and it doesn't look the way you wanted it to look, so you stop before you're done. Or you write a story, but the first draft isn't anything like you wanted it to be, so you just stop writing it. And a lot of people delete it. I've talked to people who delete their stories before they finish them. And I believe you have to go through the process and finish, because taking something from the beginning to the end and finishing it is how you practice. And you're not going to be good at the beginning. Your creative work is not going to be, not always, that's not totally true. It can be. And I think it's important to leave space for that. But a lot of the work that I do with people lives in that part where people are denying the value of their creative work because it doesn't look like what they thought it should look like. But you have to finish it, because you don't know how to write a short story until you've written a whole story. You don't know how to draw a picture of a bird unless you've actually drawn the bird. And if you start 400 pictures of birds and you never finish them, you've never actually drawn a bird.
Oh, wow.
So you know how to start it. But if you're not finishing it, you're not. Brains need to finish the process so that when we do it again, we can learn from it. But if you never finish, you can't learn from what you did before.
Oh, that's so valuable.
Yeah.
I think this is great.
It's about writing. And it is a little different because, you know, with drawing and sculpture, you can erase and you can reform, but it's a little bit different. But with writing, editing is a crucial part of that process. So when you take a story, short story or a book, and you write it, and I mean, that's why they call it a shitty first draft, not because it is actually bad, but because you want to give yourself permission to be bad and to make mistakes and to do things that are strange and weird and don't like, and that are terrible. You want to give yourself permission for that. Because so many times within being awful, that's creative chaos. And it's important. It's really important to allow that, because it's uncomfortable, and it's very important to allow that to be. But the beauty of writing is you see it, you're like, oh, I don't really like that the way it is. And then you can edit it. Mm-hmm. And then it can become closer to what you want it to be a little bit at a time.
Oh, I love this. We changed to a wonderful topic, I think. Because this creativity is really, I just read the biography of, well, it's not the biography, but a lot of Michelangelo, and how he saw a sculpture just in a block of stone. And he saw the block of stone and he knew how to get everything that is not the right picture inside of his head, get out of it. So I think, and you just mentioned it, it's so wonderful to say, okay, this is an opportunity to really get yourself learning from mistakes. So because we always say, okay, a lot of people know that they should learn from mistakes. Mistakes are not bad. We still think they are bad and we want to avoid them. But if we do them, yes, here is actually a part where you can say, okay, I go now into my mistakes and I create something new from it. This is fantastic, I think. It's my learning process.
It is. And, you know, avoid, like what I was saying before, trying to always be within the lines and in control. You know, I mean, I'm talking about control. When we talk about you want to stay in control and relaxed and calm when you're dealing with your children or if you're dealing with an emergency, it's very different than in your creative work. You don't want to stay in control. You want to make mistakes. There are so many times that your so-called mistake is actually exactly what you needed, and you never would have found it if you hadn't made a mistake. Yeah. You know, so it's not actually a mistake. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you have to be, you know, I use this example a lot. When you see a small child learning how to walk and they're fumbling around and they fall over and they do all these different things, nobody says to a child, "Oh my God, what were you thinking? You're terrible at this walking. You just fell. Get back on your feet." No one would say that because we understand in order to walk, you're going to be out of balance. You have to learn how to do it. You have to figure it out. You're going to fall. And little kids are, their bodies are made to fall. They're floppy. They're close to the ground. They're tiny. You know, we were born to make mistakes in order to figure things out. And anything we do, whether it's, you know, becoming, you know, a top level rate, you know, bicyclist or a writer or an artist or whatever it is that person wants to be, there are so many mistakes and failures along the way to becoming who you want to be. And without them, if you did everything perfectly all the time, I would venture to say your art and your what you create would not be as good as the one who made mistakes along the way.
Great. I love this statement. That's great. Yes. Would you say that motherhood has changed or reshaped your approach to creativity?
Yes. Excuse me. I think motherhood has changed the way I approach creativity in a few ways. One of them is I have much less time in order to create than I did when I was single. I was single or before kids. So, you know, we all face resistance. We all like, oh, I don't really feel like doing it. But if I don't take advantage of my writing time, I lose my writing time. I can't just say, oh, I'll do it later, because this is when I have it. And it's really helped me be a lot more structured in how I work. But I think also it's really helped me let go. You know, because I, you know, went from the, even pregnancy, you don't know how you're going to feel. You don't know if you're going to feel sick. You don't know what your pregnancy is going to be like. Just because, you know 10 people whose pregnancy went a certain way, there are no guarantees. And I feel like all of parenthood is like that. As much as you can try to put in a schedule and an order, something is always going to come up. If you wake up in the morning and your child has 103 degree fever, your day is different now. You have to figure things out differently. And there's so many things like that. So it has taught me to be like, all right, things are different now. Let me figure out what this is going to be now. So I think in that sense, in both of those senses, it's helped me embrace chaos, and it's helped me really take advantage of the structure that I have and create that structure for the creative structure that I need in order to keep myself creating the things that I want to create, because I need to create. Mm-hmm. I love writing. I'm happy when I write. It's the time I have that's just for me. And I love what I'm doing, and I create worlds that wouldn't exist if I didn't create them.
Wow. It's fueling your cup, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, and then you can give to your children again too, because you're filled up and happy and just feeling whole, I think that's the wonderful place to be and to be able to respond if they are just, I don't know, going to be chaotic or whatever, the mess around you. So, yes, can you share a day in life of a mom finding to create? How do you actually make it happen?
So, you know, I was saying this before, it's different now. Over time, it's changed. So when I first started writing, and when I was saying, you know, because writing is something that it has taken a while for me to take it seriously and for the people around me to really see it as, oh, this is what I do. And truthfully, like, each of us has to take our own work seriously if we want other people to take it seriously. So, you know, for me, this room I'm in, you see the blank wall, you see, this was actually my daughter's room. She doesn't live here anymore. She's in college. And she gave me permission to use her room as my office. So I have a space for myself. You know, and in this room, even the kids don't even come in here, which always surprises me. They do a little bit, but not much. Like, I'll never find a child at my computer, at my desk. Like, somehow they know, do not do that. But so, you know, I get up, I do my morning rituals. Depending on the day, there's usually a time period of, okay, get ready for the day, get the kids ready, you know. Assuming it's like a school or camp day, get everybody ready, out the door, and then I have time for my work day before lunchtime and they come home. And again, during that time, I, you know, in past years, every year, I have a plan for my writing life. And I wrote a book on it called The Writer's Roadmap, and it's based on a business plan. It's based on a business plan that people that called the OGSM that was originally created for small businesses, and I've sort of adapted it for writers. So I make a new OGSM every year, writing roadmap every year. And in past years, I had sort of created a lot of space in my days. So Mondays and Fridays were my writing days, and I didn't do anything else during those days. Well, I would get together with friends for breakfast. I would schedule my doctor's appointments and things like that on those days. And then in between, it was sort of more open space for I could do any one of these types of things. This year, I'm doing it a little bit differently, where I'm scheduling things very specifically. Like, you know, and I no longer have 2 days for writing. I have one full day and then 2 mornings because I needed extra time for meetings and for different things that I'm doing. And then I have 1 day that I'm writing queries for my books. I have 1 day that I'm writing pitches about articles. I have 1 day that I'm sending out partnership letters, and it's much more structured. And that's very new for me. That level of structure is new. And so far it's going well. I've done what I wanted to do so far, but it is a day at a time right now because I'm getting used to something different. But because I realized that I gave myself too much space, which was great at the beginning while I was easing into it, so it kind of eased the pressure. But now that I'm used to doing all these things and I've done them so many times, you know, it's not a great idea for me to have extra time to mess around because I'll use it and I won't do anything with that time. So I've made my schedule a lot stricter.
So you wouldn't say that this tight structure or your schedule is blocking you from your creativity, right?
So far, no.
Okay.
But also keep in mind, I've spent the last 20 years of my life getting to this point.
Yeah.
So it's not like I sat down my first day, had this incredible structure, and then just did it. It was, you know, I actually have a blog post about it. Quite a few years ago, I decided I wanted to really create a strong writing practice. And that's when I started doing my Monday, Friday writing, where that was just for writing. And I even have a post on my blog about this where I kind of outline how it worked. But at the beginning, I wasted a lot of time. But the more I worked, by the end of that year, I was, and also closer I got to finishing a book. So I wrote a book that year. At the beginning, if I wrote 5 pages in a week, it was a lot. By the end, I would have mornings where I would write 20 to 30 pages. And now also keeping in mind, writing the first 20 pages of a book takes a lot longer than writing the last 20 pages of a book. Because the first 20 pages are complete chaos. You don't know what you're doing. You don't know where you're going. You have endless options. Whereas the last 20 pages of a book, you know where you're going and you know what you want to do. And I'll also say, what before when I said my writing is just joyful time for me and I love it, I didn't start there. You know, I really didn't start there. And I still feel resistance when I sit down to work. But I'm better at, I've spent so much time saying like, all right, I'm feeling resistance. I'm just going to work anyway. And I sit myself down and I do it. And the structure now helps me because I say, if I don't do it by 3, I have a meeting at 3 and then I've lost my time to do it. And I really want to meet that goal. But that is also from years of practicing sitting down to write, practicing reaching my goals, practicing writing the books, practice doing all these different things that I'm doing. And so they become habit for me So mm-hmm. now it's much easier to do it.
So and what I hear is a lot of discipline in the beginning, right?
Discipline.
Until it becomes a habit.
Space.
Yeah.
Yes. But also a lot of forgiveness. Like, I sat down and I had 5 hours to write today, but I only wrote for 20 minutes at the end of the day.
Yeah.
That, I can't tell you how many times I did that. Where it's like, I would do Monday, Friday, and I would mess around on Monday. Or I'd be, let me just check my email. And the next thing I know, it's 5 hours later, and I've been doing everything else.
Mm-hmm.
And, and then Friday, it's like getting to the end. And I'm like, I should just do something. And then mm-hmm. I sit down and write. And I was like, why didn't I do that on Monday? Because I really loved what I wrote.
Mm-hmm.
Slowly but surely, that 20 minutes at the end of the day on Friday became Monday morning. And I worked on it a little bit at a time.
That's so great.
Discipline, set a schedule, do your best to stick with it, and get support. Get support, have community. In my writing community, we do weekly co-working sessions, which I never used to believe in. And then I started doing them with my community, and you just get so much done. And there are people I know who come to those sessions because that's their writing time for the week, and they don't miss it.
Yeah.
And having other people there is great because they hold you accountable and you feel like you're part of something as opposed to just working on your own in an empty room while chaos is raging outside.
So that's great. So what's one piece of advice you'd give to a mom who feels she's lost her creative spark in the chaos of parenting? Is there anything?
What I would say is, give yourself the gift of just 10 minutes a day, any time of the day. I prefer the morning because once it's, when you start and you just spend 10 minutes in the morning and you've taken that step into your creativity, it sets you up for the whole day. So you know you've already done it. So you've taken care of your creative self already. Just take 10 minutes. And do something with it. Doesn't matter what it is. And use that 10 minutes. And it's also a practice of not attending to your family first, of attending to yourself first, just mm-hmm. for 10 minutes. And do something, whether it's 10 minutes in a gratitude journal or 10 minutes of free writing or 10 minutes of a story, 10 minutes of a sculpture, whatever it is, whatever your creative outlet is or whatever you want your creative outlet to be, just take 10 minutes for yourself to try it and see what happens.
Oh, and that's great.
Keep it simple because 10 minutes, I started at 10 minutes 20 years ago and now, and then I built a business out of it and I work with clients and I've written 5 books and I write articles and I show up on podcasts and it's become not only my work, but it's my calling. Mm-hmm. And I enjoy it. And I love what I do every day. And that began just 10 minutes.
That began with 10 minutes. That's incredible. Yes, I love this. If you had to pick one habit that keeps you creating, even when life is messy, what would it be?
It is that just 10 minutes. Just take
it's the 10 minutes. Okay.
Because it's the practice. It really is the practice. Like when you're doing something regularly, it becomes a habit and you continue to go back to it. So a lot of the work that I do, and I talk a lot about the chaos, but so much of what I do is I read a lot about neuroscience and how our brains work and what keeps us connected to our work. And both my community and what I do on a daily basis for myself are all based on that. And how do you shift your mindset? How do you change your habits? How do you create new habits? Because there are these little things that you can do that just automatically move you forward. So in my community, one of the things that I do is every Monday we have an accountability check-in. Mondays and Fridays. So Monday is what's your plan for the week? Friday is what are you celebrating this week? And it doesn't have to take long. It can take a minute. You don't have to spend a long time on it. Just saying, my plan is for the week is to write 10 minutes every day in the morning. And then on Friday, I am celebrating that today, let's say you did all 5 days or every day of the week. That's a huge thing to celebrate. Mm-hmm. Consistency and working towards your goals and what you'll find that you created is going to be really wonderful. Even if some of it is not the perfection that you want it to be, there will be pieces in there that you're happy about. Now, let's say you didn't do all days. Then you celebrate what you did, and next week you'll continue. And it's the practice. It's the practice that will bring you back over and over.
That's great. So tell us, please, what do you offer? You just mentioned your books. You mentioned your writing club, your community. So what is your offer and where can people find?
All right. So the two best places, I'll start with where to find me. The two best places to find me are my website, which is myname.com. So leeschulman.com.
I will place this in the description. Excellent.
And then Instagram. Instagram is the social media place where I spend the most time. And it's where I do talk about creativity and, which I'll get to my offerings in just a second, anything I do, any. So what I do is I have my writing community. It's called the Inspired Writer Community. And it's all these things that I'm talking about that I've done for myself and practiced for years. All of these are, you know, I think of it as a toolbox for creativity. You're not going to use all of it. You wouldn't go to a toolbox and use every single thing in your toolbox to create a house. You choose what you need. And that's very much what this community is. And there's accountability, there's co-working sessions, there's regular workshop, writing workshops, and there's an entire resource library that covers pretty much anything you would need for your writing life, whether it's pitching articles or how to start your book or how to write your bio. I couldn't even list them all. There's like 60 or 70 different things in there. And so that's the community. And it's not open for enrollment at the moment, but I do have a sign up for it. And it's going to open again in April. And then there's that. And I teach workshops every month. I have a new workshop. Mm-hmm. And it ranges. So this month I'm doing a how to create more compelling characters from flat to fantastic. How to really create characters that connect with your audience. I'm also planning on doing one on AI for writers later this year. So there's a wide range of the workshops that I give because just elements and things that are coming up in the writing world and impacting writers wherever you are in your writing career. So there's that. I also run writing retreats and I work with people one-on-one. So if the community is not for you, but you want to go deeper in your writing, you can just send me a message and we can talk about what you want to do for your writing life. And again, I work with people in helping them create a roadmap for themselves so they can sort of make a plan and work toward it. What they want. So I've worked with a lot of people who, you know, whether they're stay-at-home moms or they have a full-time job that they don't want anymore, and sort of moving to being a full-time writer. I've worked with a lot of people to do that, or I've worked with people just to write their books. And all of the things that I'm talking about, they're underlying everything that I do.
Great. Thank you very much. Thank you very much for sharing those valuable insights. I really enjoyed it, and I think the audience can take away a lot here. So I'm grateful that you have been my guest and that you could talk about your topic. And to all the listeners, please stay tuned, subscribe.